Welcome to Bitstorm, a comedy game design podcast by two guys who know nothing about comedy nor game design. I'm Ben Slinger, and with me, as always, leaving room for him to take a sip of his drink, is Trevor Scott.
Hello.
Hey, hey, hey. What are we doing this week, Trevor?
We're just going to play some Click Pitch, which is good old classic Click Pitch. As we all know it, it's a game where we each have a random word generator. On the count of 3, 2, 1, we're going to click. We're going to get a word each from probably the common complexity, because we've seen some weird words coming up as we go higher. And we'll take those words. We'll come up with a game design based maybe off one of those words, maybe just off the feeling that we get out of them.
It's just the vibe.
It's a starting off point. It doesn't need to be there. Like, it's our game. We can choose whatever the fuck we want. So, anyway, I'm going to find this thing because I don't currently have it up.
Unprofessional.
Very.
We're over 300.
Is that the word? Is that your first word? Unprofessional.
70 episodes in and... No. My first word is bandstand.
Aging.
Ooh, aging. Okay. So, I mean, bandstand gives me it gives me sort of a 50s feeling.
Yeah,
of like
it gives me a
fair,
Grease feel.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, you're at some fair and there's like a big band or whatever up on there, or just like someone emceeing or doing something up on the bandstand.
I'm getting a very casual sort of game feel that you're part of a committee that you're trying to revive this bandstand and basically bring, you know, good old classic entertainment back to the masses.
And so is this set in current day then, and you're trying to bring back that feel? Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, you're basically, your first thing is to revamp the bandstand, but it's also, you know, then maybe the planning of the festival and
then the eventual, like, success is gauged by how many people look away from their phones in the audience.
Definitely.
You just got all the faces with, like, their faces lit up from their phones, and as they, like, kind of flick off and they look up to the bandstand, your score goes up.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think a cozy sort of game, you know?
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of sort of having a bunch of stuff to choose from when it comes to decorations, when it comes to acts, when it comes to, like, maybe your
paint color,
attitude and speech and colors and things, and that there's some that matching them up is like there's an aesthetic thing there for, you know, what clashes and what goes together. I guess depending on how cozy you want to make it, because I feel like often cozy games are very much about the creativity and less about measuring success, and that it's more of an intrinsic success.
Yeah. And look, I think you could play around with things of the ilk of, you know, you're going to get your brother to do some of the contract work because, you know, he's looking for a job and it'll just be good to help him out. Mum wants him out of the house sort of thing. But then... You know, if he does a shit job because, you know, he hasn't been trained up properly, or you know, didn't have the oversight that you know you were supposed to give him, then you could have, like, other things happen kind of storylet wise. I think you could play around a lot with those sort of things.
Yeah, I do like the idea of having some different aspects in there narratively. Like, you start to get to know, particularly when it's on that theme of kind of bringing back community and that, you know, like you said, that vibe of that entertainment, that, yeah, sort of getting to know people in the neighborhood then and in the community in different ways could be kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay, I'm definitely getting, like, a not pixel vibe, but a 2D, but probably more hand-painted.
Yeah, I almost feel like a purposeful kind of cardboard cutout vibe could be interesting. Like, 2D on this, like, because the stage is there and, like, you've got your animated sort of 2D cards with a bit of a, you know, cutout border around them. So it's sort of like a little diorama playing out in that way. And so it really, I feel like that could really add to that crafty, cozy, you know, kind of vibe.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think.
I like it.
I think I feel like sort of hit the nail on the head and we should move
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and then we'll move on.
Sneak.
Plummet.
Ooh.
Hmm.
Ooh, I love the idea of you're a spy mm-hmm. and you're on this high-rise building and it's broad okay. daylight and you have to sneak down from the top to the bottom on the outside of the building.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah, what was that game? It wasn't a maybe had some stealth elements. Well, do you remember a game from like the 80s and the first thing you do is you like zip line across onto a roof. And then it's like an isometric it was maybe called Degeneration, funnily enough.
Mm.
Anyway, it just reminded me of that. It's got nothing to do with it. Don't worry about it.
Yep. Okay, cool.
But that's just a little core memory unlocked.
Yep. Achievement unlocked. You just got the little Xbox symbol.
Yeah. Yep. Ba-ding.
So, yeah, I think you could take this in a number of different ways. Like, there are obviously people, you know, looking for you. You've got to try and any way that you can get down.
Hmm.
Is how it's gonna kind of work.
Yeah, well, I like the idea of you start with some of your traditional kind of like higher tech spy gear. So you've maybe got the like suction things or magnets or something that you can, you know, crawl down the wall with. But
it's broad daylight. You're gonna get quickly picked up. Like,
oh yeah, and then there's stealth aspects there for like how you might hide yourself or different things. But I think fairly quickly something happens and you lose that stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's more about improvising.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that at some point there's going to be a window washer, and you're gonna end up, you know, sort of pretending to wash some windows as you head down. But of course, that's mm-hmm. only going to get you down so far because, you know, then something's going to happen inside, and you're going to realize, oh shit, I need to go help save this person or whatever, and that's right. going to set you up into the next thing of. Like, now you're a little bit further down and there's been an explosion and now you're trying to get these people out and...
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a Die Hard-ish vibe, a bit of a Neo escaping the agents vibe.
Yep.
Of, like, running and ducking through offices to not be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And to then go out the other window and, like, go down a few more levels a different way, you know, finding your way through...
Throwing a you know a fire hose out the window and you know you can get down and
swing back in on a lower level for sure, but the whole like are the office workers getting startled as you come in and you just run through sorry you know go out the other side and a bit of that sort of vibe. But yeah, I think you know when you're up high at the beginning you're making sure you're not being seen by like helicopters and things. As you mm-hmm. get lower, it might be like people in other buildings that you have to keep an eye on or, you know, or by that point, you've got people in the building looking for you. And then as you get lower down, it's like, oh shit, now you're visible from the ground easily. You know, so you're sort of having to go through these different stages of.
Yeah.
What's the goal, though? Is it just to get to the ground? Are you just escaping, or are you trying to reach something?
You're trying to escape with this this particular MacGuffin that you've already captured the first time. And
yeah, I like the idea that like it was on the roof or something. So you've managed pre the game starting to get onto the roof, and the start of the game is basically you grabbing the thing that you've worked so hard to get, at least in the story.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like the end at the beginning, but then it's like, oh shit, now I've got to escape with it.
And it turns out the escape is so much more harrowing, which is why we wanted to, you know, maybe the spy says literally at the start, like, I escaped all modes of detection to get up here. Like, that that took so long. I'm glad it's just smooth sailing from here. And it's like, you yeah. know that the game's just started and you know, he's basically not knowing what he's in for or they are in for.
I like the idea of, like, you get a bit of a briefing, you start... I mean, you could do it in a couple of ways, but I've also kind of like the idea of it literally, you get heli-dropped onto the roof after a bit of a briefing. It's like, mission start, and then you, like, open a door and it's there, and it's like, mission complete. Just like, what? Mission two, escape. It's like, oh, shit. The helicopter's gone, or it got shot down or something, or whatever. Like, yeah.
I know. There's something about, like, you were told in the mission briefing that there'd be, like, a parachute waiting for you. And it's like, change of plans, parachute wasn't available, but this abseiling gear should be enough. Like,
or maybe you've immediately gotten betrayed by your, like, this could be, like, not only is it getting the big MacGuffin that's at the beginning instead of the start, but, like, all the big betrayals and the, like, the stuff that you'd usually leave until the end of the story
have already happened.
They just happened in that first mission, like, one after the other in the course of, like, 2 minutes. And so, yeah, the parachute that you expected wasn't there.
Got stuff. You're literally in a crew, like, of six people.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that's just perfect. And it's like, we've gone through so many missions together, and you know, you're building up over the first minute, like, how much you trust these people, and they all betray you the second that you get up
there. Well, either they all betray you, or one of them just, like, shoots four of the others and then points the gun at you and, like, starts monologuing.
I know I'm the latest hire to join this crew 7 years ago.
But it's been a long con. I've been building up your trust just for this one heist. And then you just shoot them, and then it's like, now you gotta escape. Or maybe they escape, so they can come back later.
Well, it turns out they had a bulletproof vest on. You shot them in the chest, and you didn't check their pulse. Like,
well, it turns out all of the other four had bulletproof vests on. You all knew the whole time this guy was the mole. It's all part of a bigger plan, but it doesn't come out till the end when you get back to the ground. Well, actually, yeah, you get back to the ground. You've gone through this whole game. The mole is there. Like, you thought you'd get away or whatever, and then your other four come in and just, like, take him out.
Yeah.
It's like, we knew the whole time.
As did I. Ching! I like the idea that there's also an Ubisoft-like ending to the game, where if you don't get off the roof really quickly, you know, you spend 10 minutes up there, then, you know, the guy that you shot sort of comes back up and he goes, oh, so you decided not to leave. It's like, yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, sort of.
Does Ubisoft do that a lot?
In Far Cry, they if you don't move at the very start of some of these games, like, it will just end the game without actually progressing into the full story. It's a very Far Cry thing to do.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I think this could be a lot of fun. You could definitely play a lot with the tropes of those spy sort of spy style games, but also, you know, have everything go to shit, like, very, very early in the game, even though it's technically halfway through this story.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you can show some of the things in flashbacks and that sort of stuff, which...
Yeah, I like the idea of maybe they just, like, reminisce through, like, maybe you end up getting a radio or whatever and you can reconnect back with your person in the chair.
Yeah, the oracle, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how you, you know, get some backstory, get some exposition.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome.
Okay. 3-2-1 click.
3-2-1 click.
Flooding.
Element.
Oh. Can you flood with something that's not water, a different element? Earth flood!
I mean, that's just an avalanche, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Fire flood is just a... is just a bushfire.
Yep.
Air flood is a hurricane.
Yeah. Ooh, there's... there's something about, you know, a massive flood that's coming.
Mm.
And, you know, you're trying to stop this on a global sort of scale. Like...
okay. Taking it further, like, let's move away from any sort of thing that could be biblical about a giant flood and more to something that's science or science fiction-y.
Yeah.
What could be introducing water into our ecosystem, into the water cycle? Because as we know, like, there's not actually enough water on the Earth to, like, flood the entire Earth.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, what is water but oxygen and hydrogen together? Basically, there's a new... I think there's a new, like, technology that scientists have made that can combine hydrogen and oxygen together to basically create new water. The water that hasn't existed before.
Or maybe it's a byproduct. And something goes awry. Like, maybe it's a byproduct of some sort of power generation that, it essentially is fission or fusion based. The byproduct is water, but, like, it can't be turned off. And so it's just spewing water that's essentially turning, like, carbon or something, right? Into water. Because oxygen is, what's oxygen? How many? Is it six protons?
It could be.
Where am I at? Oxygen's eight. Carbon's six. Right. I got those the wrong way around. And then hydrogen's obviously one. So I'm just trying to do the math here. Like, how many do you need? Like, two carbons, you split into 12, you get... anyway, whatever. You get a bunch of oxygen and water out, maybe. Or a bunch of hydrogen and oxygen and however it ends up combining, dividing. But essentially then that's taking all carbon life forms, right?
Yeah.
And putting out energy, yes, but also water.
Yeah. And I think this is one of those things of, like, this water is somewhat unnatural. Like, yes, it mixes with the other parts of the water, but if you ever, you know, capture this in a glass bottle, you can tell this water versus the other water. Like,
interesting.
There's something about it that just...
So is it, even though it's molecularly the same?
Yeah, I think there's, you know,
it's got a few more.
this is
the water that has the memory of all the dinosaur shit in it from, you know, the homeopathy.
Yeah, I'm not thinking that way. I'm thinking that effectively,
it's something,
like,
about the way it bonds or something. Maybe it's the same. It's still H2O, but it's bonding in a different way.
Exactly.
You know, due to some change in the nuclear forces or whatever. We can have some technobabble.
Yeah.
Basically, what would be interesting is maybe it, like, flows slightly differently. Like, it's a little bit greasy, but, like, really subtly.
It's water that cannot flow laminar, you know.
Laminarly,
It can't get to that laminar flow state because it just...
Oh, it's like unstable sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, that's the only way you can test it.
Yeah.
You have to test it by setting up laminar flow, and if some water comes through and it like wrecks the flow, then you know you've got some
unnatural water. Now, the cool thing about this is that, you know, once the water gets added to the world, like, it can't really be removed. You know, it's one of these things that, sure, right now this water isn't going to cause the issue, but give it, you know, enough time, and we're going to be overrun with this water because it's like
we're adding new water. Yeah, well, again, it's like I like the idea of we've created a new, you know, environmental disaster.
Yeah,
over the long term, by, you know, what we thought was solving another one, because literally, like, it takes carbon and turns it into energy and water, as opposed to like coal power plants now take carbon essentially and turn it into carbon dioxide and energy.
It, so like, it turns it into dihydrogen monoxide instead.
Yeah, exactly. That horrible, horrible chemical. But that is actually now an environmental hazard because we're like, you know, it's the same sort of thing, the scientist estimate. Oh, well, you know, it's going to take 100 years or whatever. And so either it moves faster than you expect, or this game is set 90 years after that it was introduced. And of course, nothing's been done about it. We've just been going on with this power method that's powered the world.
But now we're starting to realize that, oh yeah, you know how we were always concerned about the polar ice caps, you know, melting and then flooding, you know, parts of the world and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, they're larger than ever because they've got more to deal with, more to work with. But so do the oceans in general.
And that's scary. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And we're saying that you can't turn it off. Everyone is now, like... Everyone has forgotten about old power generation actually works.
And totally.
Like,
I mean, it'd be a great allegory for the current climate disaster, right? Like, you know, in the same way that it's changed the world, this technology and the ability to have the power generation that brings, mm-hmm. and now we're stuck on it, and most people don't want to budge, even though, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think this could actually be, you know, quite an interesting story behind the game, but the actual stuff that's going on is, again, I'm in a spy mood today, probably because, as we've been discussing, I've been watching a bit of Chuck, trying to... not think about Adam Baldwin at all when I'm watching it, because
most Baldwins, related or not to the main ones, are just not really just worth thinking
not
about.
Not worth your time. But I think the idea of having like a no one lives forever sort of first person.
Yeah, well, I think,
but more think on the analyst side, more.
I think what might serve this story is maybe multiple perspectives, multiple protagonists that you're switching between. Definitely. So, like, yeah, one different is agents. Well, either different agents or, like, an agent working for one government and then, like, a politician or an intern to a politician or something, where you're seeing kind of some of the stuff there, and then maybe someone who's an environmentalist who's, like, trying to change people's minds. Or a bit of, like...
Call of Duty, what they used to do, which is different protagonists. Right,
yeah, they did. Like, but what I was thinking of was that movie Don't Look Up.
Oh, yep.
Where you saw a lot of people, how they were affected by what was happening. And,
yeah.
And again, obviously, the climate allegory.
I think that could actually work really well. Like, you could really play with, you know... This one scene where you're walking through the West Wing and you're hearing these conversations and you're just like jotting down notes for the president or whatever. And like, then the next scene you're playing, you know, someone in a press office and you're hearing other things. And
yeah, that's it. Almost essentially, also almost like a bit of World War Z, the books, which was the zombie apocalypse, but just from all these little vignettes, essentially, all these different perspectives.
Oh, I really wish that the movie World War Z was done more in that respect instead of a vehicle for Brad Pitt. Because I remember hearing about, you know, what they did with World War Z, and it was showing it from a more personal point of view. Like,
yeah, it should have been Love Actually, but the zombie apocalypse.
I mean, that's kind of why I liked Zombieland, because it was more like
the ground level,
instead of Walking Dead, which was, you know, this person is, you know, a cop and, you know, has sort of strength to get through this, whereas seeing, like, a nerd, you know, having to make these rules and all this sort of stuff. But anyway,
How does Bill Murray get through the zombie apocalypse?
By pretending to be a zombie and then getting shot in the stomach with a shotgun.
Yeah, well, poorly. And good until that point, but then poorly.
Yeah.
He had to do a bit. He had to keep the bit going.
Yeah. So I think, you then, when you get about, you know, a third of the way through the game, that's when your main protagonists that you've been playing so far sort of end up working, coming together on this single, like, blog website sort of thing. And that's where you actually see, all these people have noticed that there's something wrong, and now they're trying to pull their resources and
either that or the resources that get pulled is all of the water that is now on this planet, and they're left. It's the three of them join up, and they're just left on a single island together. They're the last people left. Then the water's still rising. Or it's stopped. They ran out of carbon finally.
Oh, yeah, because I forgot about the carbon thing, about it, like, converting humans into water.
Yeah, if you get close enough.
If you get too much of the shitty water in the same place, then it you know, starts breaking down your molecules.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I mean, we're already 70% water. It just takes the rest.
Yeah. Oh, it's if you drink.
Oh, God, if you drink too much
if you drink too much and the shitty water, percentage of the shitty water versus the normal water.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Gets just over, you know, it's 40% of your body weight is now, instead of 70% of being water, you've
it
actually
just
only
tears
got
your cells apart.
30% of real water and then 40% of the shitty water.
Yep.
Oh, that basically means every drink that you take, you're sort of wondering, oh shit, is this
the
time?
I like the idea then that instead of everyone filtering with, like, a Brita filter, they've all got these laminar flow filters.
Yeah.
Essentially to test their water beforehand. And the only way you can know is if it flows out without looking like it's flowing out.
Well, because you get the laminar flow going and it's like a distance filter. So when the shitty water comes out, it just dribbles down onto the floor.
Right. Okay. That's pretty funny.
But yeah, I like the idea of, you know, your cat or your dog, you know, drinks from the ground and they melt into the water, like,
oh God.
That's actually where they first find out, and it's like, oh shit.
It feels like a spiritual successor to Waterworld, Laminar Flow.
Yeah.
This summer, coming to a theater near you.
Okay, let's do one more. But
let's do one more. Quick one. Quickie. 3-2-1 click.
Chaos.
Catering.
Ooh, okay. It's kind of like Overcooked, but more chaos.
Like, yes, and I think the catering aspect of it
is pre-cooked food.
It brings it a little bit of a different wrinkle in. It's more about serving than cooking, or it's like two-stage, maybe, like you cook first and then you do the serving, and one can affect the other, perhaps something along those lines. Or you've got different people in charge of those different things.
Oh, there's something about having, like, two people cooking the food, two people serving the food, and seeing those Overcooked, like, levels where you are on the two trucks and they only come together for a small amount of time.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, take the food.
Hand out all the spring rolls. Okay, now you're handing out the spring rolls and they're having to, you know, keep a timer on that one, and they're steaming some you know, dim sum over here, and pan fried shallots
putting
over
together
here,
little quiches. Yeah.
Mini quiches and samosas and
So what are the challenges on the serving? Is it just like,
well, the challenges are that you've got to avoid that group of people who hound by the exit that are trying to take all the food.
It's about you actually have to get away from people. Yeah, it's about how far the food spread. How many people get at least one of whatever you're serving?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty good. And then you've got people who are, yeah, basically chasing you around, and you have to be polite, but you can't just run.
No.
It's about keeping moving, not making eye contact. It's like, okay. Oh, sorry, I didn't know.
So, in one of these sort of situations, this is a personal question for you.
Okay.
Are you one of those people?
I mean, I'm not hounding. No. In fact, I'm the person who's like subtly trying to catch the eye of them as they go past, and then when I don't, just like, okay, damn, I guess I'm going to stay hungry.
I'm one of those people who will subtly try and catch their eye by standing right in front of the door.
I mean, yeah, I guess I wouldn't be against moving somewhere where, like, increasing
advantageous
the possibility. Yes, an advantageous positioning so that I get to it sooner.
I don't know why, but I really want to play this sort of game and just be able to, you know, set little obstacles and that sort of stuff. Like, you can, maybe it's a competitive sort of thing that you got team A versus team B. You know, blue team are trying to get all their food out as much as possible, but you know, you can say to the people as you're exiting, oh, just wait, you know, the mini quiches are coming.
Right, to try to put them off. Oh, they're like, okay, I'll wait. Yeah, I'm just in the mood for some mini quiches. Yeah. Need a plate of those.
Yeah, I think that would actually be kind of fun. You know, catch co-op sort of game.
Party down the game.
Pretty much. I mean, you could come up with a whole heap of different rules as to what's going on in the parties, and storylets could actually happen.
Types, you know, of parties. Storylets in everything, man.
Yeah.
Storylets everywhere. Definitely.
Cool.
Cool. Let's. I think we're going to leave it there for tonight.
Yeah, we are.
So, you know, thanks for joining us. Sorry to see you go. There's plenty more episodes online if you are missing us already. Just go to podchaser.com/bitstorm. There's links to all your favorite apps there to subscribe and get new episodes weekly.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed weekly, maybe late,
but mostly on time. Sometimes on time.
Sometimes on time, yep. And you can find the awesome song that we play at the start and end of each episode, which is called Mount Defiance, off of the album Containment Failure by the band Kurudust at kurudust.bandcamp.com.
That's right. So thank you again for joining us this week on Bitstorm. I'm Ben Slinger.
I'm Trevor Scott.
And I'm going to wait for the ricotta pastries. Thanks.